Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Okay, today I'm going to give, I've been reading A Sense of Style by Steven Pinker. It's his book about writing. I think I should be writing more. And in that, he uses the following quote as a good example of good writing. And it's from the biologist Richard Dawkins, some of you probably know. His book, Unweaving the Rainbow. It's about science and art. This is how he starts it. We are going to die, and that makes us the lucky ones. Most people are never going to die because they are never going to be born. The potential people who could have been here in my place, but who will, in fact, never see the light of day, outnumber the sand grains of Arabia. Certainly those unborn ghosts include greater poets than Keats, scientists greater than Newton. We know this because the set of possible people allowed by our DNA so massively exceeds the set of actual people. In the teeth of these stupefying odds, it is you and I in our ordinariness that are here. We privileged few who won the lottery of birth against all odds. How dare we whine at our inevitable return to that prior state from which the vast majority never have stirred? Stirring writing. I love that quote. And it so fits with our practice. From my point of view, Dawkins in this, you know, zooms out, way out, to look at way beyond all of our daily concerns, even beyond our deeper concerns, and gives us a new perspective, kind of a cosmological perspective. He says, we're the lucky ones because we were born at all. Here we are, worried about our little things and worried about death and not appreciating the fact that we were born at all. I sometimes think, I really don't think I deserve this life. I don't think we deserve this life of ours. And I don't think we... I think we too often feel like we do deserve this life of ours. From my perspective, we are privileged. It's a privilege, not a right, to be a human being. Which, by the way, Zen Master Dogen says, 13th century, Dogen says really exactly the same thing. He encourages his monks to practice with a joyful heart. And that joy, he says, should be rooted in gratitude. He asked them to remember that they had the good fortune to be born a human, not in the realm of the gods or the demigods where everybody's lazy and lying around. That would not be so good. Or in the realm of the hungry ghosts, the hell realms, the animals, where everybody's ignorant or bound up with anger or greed. So he says, this realm, this human realm, has enough suffering in it and enough ease that we can practice the way. He says, we're the lucky ones that get born in that band. And we can if we can see it in that with that perspective, it puts our daily complaints in a different frame. And that's the same frame that Leonard Cohen puts it in when he received an award from the Spanish, sort of the highest arts award in Spain. And he has this nice line, let's see if I can recall it. Never lament casually. Only do so in the strict confines of beauty and dignity. You know, back it up and see it in that larger frame of our concerns together with beauty and dignity. And over again, Zen calls us to this wider perspective. Zen is not just about sitting and losing yourself. It's also about learning this larger perspective, learning to see things in a larger frame. And often, very often, that frame, that perspective, zooms out to include both life and death. And in so many, and to see them as a whole, to see them as partners. And as evidence of that, it's so often that either birth or death or life and death are twinned when talking about, when you read Zen texts, to put them on the same level. When we hit the Han, the traditionally written on the Han, and the message of the Han is life and death are great matters. Don't just spend your life with trivial affairs. Time flies like an arrow. Be diligent. Be diligent. Life and death are great matters. And we're reading some koans on Wednesday night. Here's one, the Mumen Kan number 47, Tosetsu's three barriers. And I'm just going to tell you about the second barrier, which is once you realize your true nature, you are free from birth, from life and death. Tell me, when your eyesight deserts you at the last moment, how can you be free from life and death? Now, I worked with that koan at Mount Baldy. And I knew the direction. I didn't know the answer, or just what to do, or how exactly to play with it. You figure that out the second you get in there. But I knew the direction because my teacher talked about it so often. Talked about life and death, life being the self activity, death being the no self activity, life being desire, death being no desire. And that we get a chance to experience both of those within our life. And the way to transcend life and death, the way to be free from life and death, is in fact not to be rid of life and death, but be able to do both life and death, to be able to do the life activity, the self activity, the get up and go activity, and to be able to do the death activity, the losing activity, the quiet, the activity of complete quiet. And in Zen practice, we are doing, living, and dying all of the time so that we can live, take initiative, and die, lose initiative, all the time. To be sure, our core practice, you know, when you come to Zen, you might think it's all about dying. I mean, about losing, about getting quiet, because that's what we add to our life. We add this practice of Zazen to our life. And when I was training, you know, John Paul II said, the Pope said, he criticized Buddhism as a life-denying activity, or a life-denying way. And I don't, yeah, I can see how we might think that. You know, here we are. just apart from life, doing our practice. But if I had a chance to talk to John Paul, I would tell him, yeah, we're a death-affirming way, not a life-denying one. We are learning to do this death activity so that we can know both life and death. But in this zazen, we really do learn to give up ourselves, our everyday concerns, and let go of everything, so that, you know, as they say in another context, we can rest in peace. We willingly follow that activity of death. It's not easy. It's almost like you have to get past a gag reflex in order to do that activity. But then after that, we pick up our cushions and go out and follow the activity of life, without holding on to death, to this activity, this quiet activity, but knowing it. And I think as we practice this, we can get better at it, better at living and dying freely, better at having a felt sense of what it is to let, a felt sense of what it is to let go and what it is to pick up. And that's symbolized in our bows. So we go all the way down and then we come all the way back up, dying and resurrecting. And I think this can help us greatly if we can learn to integrate both those activities, both those thrusts in our life, both death and life. Helps us to start a project and then to finish the project and to bow, leave it. To work and then to stop working. To talk and then to shut up and listen. To take the lead and to follow. All of these are examples in my book of freely living and dying. And in my training, you know, one of the things that was very helpful to me was every 6 months we changed officers and we never knew what we were going to do next. We had a little sare, little sake, and everybody found out what they were going to do the next 6 months. And then the next morning, you moved moved into the cabin where if you were the cook, you moved into the cook's cabin. And next morning, you moved to the shoji cabin and started your new life, you know, after having rearranged the kitchen, done it all like you want it. Then you leave it and you go to the next thing and you pick it right up. That new activity, change. Try the new thing and leave the old thing behind. And even in the retreat that we do, I really like the rhythm of switching officers. You know, the jigijitsu and the joko switch every day. So one day you're the leader, next day you're the follower. I think we really do have to learn to both lead and follow in this path. And, it can, as I say, it can look from the outside like Zen, like we're all about losing, all about quiet, all about death. And in the middle of practice, too, we can get confused about that. And I just want to mention this because I want to ask you not to be confused about this. It can look like maybe where the practice is leading us to be uncaring about people, or just cold, or unfeeling, or unthinking. And that is just that is kind of true. The Pope was kind of right. We have to give up our life for a time in order to get this other feeling, the feeling of what it's like to die. But then we pick it up again. We come out of that state. But it can be confusing when we're training sometimes, like for instance, Lidun, when she came to Mount Baldy. and she's an architect. And she saw, we were building a toilet building at that time, and she saw that when they put the tar paper on the building, they started putting the, we don't know what we're doing, you know, we're just folks. We put the tar paper on, started on the top level, and then the next one down, and then the next one down. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. William knows right away what's going to happen when you build that building. And Lita thought, oh, God, should I say anything? Or am I just practicing and just watching whatever happens? And that was, that may sound like a crazy question, but it's a pretty good question, actually, because, you know, she's there to practice. She's there to lose herself. But thankfully, thankfully, she wasn't attached to that. So she said, so guys, you know, maybe you should do it at the bottom, to the top, and save the building that way. But you know, it comes up on a retreat. This sometimes comes up for me. We're doing a long kinhin through the woods, maybe, and there's some trash, you know, by the side of the road, or if we're going for a walk, is it now, am I working with no self and just appreciating everything just as it is, or is it time to pick up the trash? And honestly, sometimes for me, it's one of the, there is no right answer to that. Sometimes it has been important to me just to walk right past the trash and just to appreciate the world just as it is. But if I'm on a walk out there, on my own time, I'll pick up the trash. It's just that it's important to learn that death activity, but not get stuck in it. So, yeah. So I'd like to, I'd like to ask you to recognize and appreciate both your life activity and your death activity, so that, and to see them as inseparable, as nearby each other, as friendly with each other, and to see that they work together. We cannot have one without the other. We are the lucky ones. We have been born, and so we will die. And we have a chance within this life to live and die every day, and to learn what it feels like to follow the life activity and to follow the death activity. And I hope that leads you and me to a felt sense that it is okay to fully do life and then to leave it. I think with this practice, we really can learn to live and to die freely. This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.